Ecclesiastes chapter 9, we come as far as verse 11. Solomon writes and says, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. For a man does not know his time. Like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. So Solomon says, I returned once again. He's like what they call that when the president turns from one policy that he's dealing with, or one area he's dealing with, to another. They pivot.
Yeah.
He's pivoting from this now to this, or something. Solomon pivots a few times in here. So he's not actually returning from anywhere, but his thoughts are coming back to this particular place. He saw under the sun again. He sees that the race is not to the swift. There are a lot of Olympians that know that. Other people in races. The basketball championship is not to the best team, always. On average, you know, one given night. The battle's not to the strong. The battle many times was for to Israel, and they were the weak ones. When they were strong, they were that's actually when they were defeated most often, because they trusted in themselves rather than in the Lord. And the battle's not necessarily to the strong. Bread to the wise, riches to men of understanding, favor to men of skill. Time and chance happen to them all. Time and chance and circumstance. We're all subject to time and chance and circumstance. Now, for us, God is behind it all. And He is behind it all in every situation, really, in the background. This is why Paul could write letters to the churches and say, I, a prisoner of the Lord, he was sitting in Caesar's prison, you know, but he knew that if the Lord didn't want him there, he would be out doing other things. Probably had him there so he could write those letters, because otherwise he probably wouldn't do it. He'd be out ministering or traveling somewhere to evangelize. And Paul, I got some things for you to write. Time and chance and circumstance. Yet God is behind it all. Kidner says, time and chance are paired, no doubt, because they both have a way of taking matters suddenly out of our hands. In verse 12, he says, man also does not know his time, like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. Usually, evil times fall suddenly upon people. They might endure for quite some time, but kingdoms tend to fall overnight, in a short period of time. Countries fail and fall, and so these men are caught snared in an evil time. Or, you know, you go to work some Tuesday, and you go up on the 110th floor, and somebody flies airplanes into your building, you know, suddenly. You don't have any control over that. You're like a fish taken in a cruel net, or a bird caught in a snare. So we don't know what's going to come. And he'll get into that theme once again. Nobody knows what's going to befall him, what's going to come for him. And we don't. The billionaire J. Paul Getty, he was asked to explain his success. And he said, some people find oil, others don't. And many times, you know, you're in the right place, the right time. You have a thought, and it turns out one way. Somebody might be in the same place, same time, and nothing. You know. So Solomon's once again saying, this is just all vanity. You know, it's all emptiness, because you don't have any it's out of your control. You know, you don't have any control. And we don't, really. If we think we do, we probably have less than we even do have. We don't have control. That's why we need to turn control over to somebody who's able to keep things in control. That's one song about, I don't know the future. I know who holds the, yeah. Now, verse 13, he says, "This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard, rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good." So, the city, little city, few people in it, great king comes against it, besieges it, builds snares around it. There's this poor wise man that delivers the city, but nobody remembers him. Now, there was one situation where somebody had rebelled against King Saul, I believe it was. They went out to the city and they were harboring this guy, and he was just going to wipe out the city, you know. And so there was a wise woman in that city, and she said, "You just wait right there, and we'll take care of this." So, yeah, they beheaded the guy, threw his head over the wall, and Saul went back home. So, save the city by wiping off the guy's head. Nobody remembers that woman, you know. She didn't even have a name given in the account. You know, just this older, wise woman. David Guzik says on this, "Men quickly forget, but God never does. He knows those who are His." That scripture I was talking to you about earlier. 2 Timothy 2:19. "Nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having this seal, the Lord knows those who are His, and let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity." So, God never forgets. He knows those who are His. He points out as well, He has a book of remembrance before Him for those that fear the Lord. That's in Malachi 3:16. It says, "Those who feared the Lord spoke to one another, and the Lord listened and heard them. So a book of remembrance was written before Him for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on His name." So they weren't even talking to Him. They were talking to each other about Him, and the Lord was listening, and He wrote a book of remembrance. Kind of reminds me of the book of Esther, because the king would have chronicles written, you know, about things that happened. And then one night when he was couldn't sleep, he's an insomniac, he said, had somebody get out the book and read to him, and Mordecai had saved his life. He'd, you know, overheard some guys plotting to kill the king, assassinate the king, and told somebody and saved his life. And this guy, King Ahasuerus, Xerxes, he said, "What'd we do for Mordecai anyway?" And the guy said, "Well, we didn't do anything." He said, "Well, wow, we got to do something to make this right." And of course, Haman, the bad guy, the hater of the Jews, who was going to wipe them all out, he comes in before the king, and the king, thinking about this, and he says, "Haman, what should be done for the guy that the king wants to honor?" And Haman thought, "Well, who could the king want to honor more than me?" And so he told him, "You should, you know, take your second good horse," I don't remember all the details, "you know, put the robe on him and the ring, and have somebody lead that horse through the city saying, this is what the king does to the man whom he wants to honor." "Well, that's really a good idea, Haman. You do this for Mordecai."
It's hard.
As soon as he got home, he went home. As soon as he got done, he went home and told his wife, said, "It's all over." You know? He knew what was coming. So the Lord has a book of remembrance, just like King Ahasuerus had that book of remembrance. And their names are written in heaven. That is, the ones who God remembers and knows and never forgets. In Luke 10:20, "Nevertheless, do not rejoice in this, that the spirits are subject to you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven." It's a lot more important than having power over demonic spirits. You know, when they came back, they were all excited. "Even the demons are subject to us, Lord." And what Jesus said, "I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven." I mean, he was sharing in their excitement, their joy. You know, he said, "But don't rejoice in this, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven." Pardon? Luke 10:20. So Solomon says, "The words of the wise spoken quietly should be heard rather than the shout of a ruler of fools." A ruler of fools. Shouting. The words of the wise quietly spoken. Back when I worked in Packing House, there were several of us Christians there. And so, you know, we'd banter back and forth past the time of day and stuff. And J.J. White, and Charlotte remembers, was on this one job. And so we're all just, you know, talking, joking and stuff. And J.J. said, "I'm the captain of a ship of fools." And I told him, "You're the captain, all right." No. The ruler of fools. The ruler of fools is usually a fool himself. So. It's kind of like the goblins. It works. That rulers are fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war. But one sinner destroys much good. Somewhere back in a previous chapter, he said he knows that God made man upright, but man has invented many schemes. And that's kind of a similar statement here. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Commentator Dean says, "Adam's sin infected the whole race of man. Achan's transgression caused Israel's defeat." One guy who didn't obey caused Israel's defeat. Joshua 7:11, "Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them, for they have even taken some of the accursed things, and have both stolen and deceived, and they have also put it among their own stuff." Stuff, that's a good word for your things. You know, it's a biblical word, stuff. "Therefore, the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies, because they have become doomed to destruction. Neither will I be with you anymore unless you destroy the accursed from among you." So Achan, everything was to be dedicated to the Lord, which means it was to be destroyed. And Achan found some stuff that was just too appealing. He coveted the stuff, so he took it and buried it in his tent. And so they went out. This was after Jericho had fallen. They went out to attack Ai. It's just a little thing, you know. We can take that easy. We don't even need to send out the whole army. Look how successful we've been. And so they send, and they're routed, and a bunch of their guys get killed, you know, because the Lord wasn't with them. Achan's transgression caused Israel's defeat. One sinner can destroy much good. Rehoboam's folly occasioned a great schism. That's in 1 Kings 12:16, which we'll be getting back to after Proverbs 31. It says, "When all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, 'What share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see to your own house, O David.' So Israel departed to their tents." So the schism through the foolishness of Rehoboam and his listening to the young men's counsel the kingdom was divided, and it remained divided until it fell. Now, God had already told Solomon that this was going to be the case, that because he was unfaithful. That's why the kingdom was ruined. But Rehoboam was one of those rulers of fools. He wasn't a very wise king. So destroyed the kingdom through his actions. So we have evil secular men. They're sinners. They can cause much evil, destroy much good. You got Hitler, guys like Hitler and Stalin, Mao, Che Guevara. We have evil leaders today like King Jong-un. Is he the new one? He's not evil anymore. Yeah. North Korea. We have the Iranian Ayatollahs. Palestinian Authority. All these are evil rulers. And there's a bunch more. You know, they're not alone. They're some of the worst, but they're not alone at all. But evil religious men can do more damage than your average evil secular man, because they create an evil eternity for many people. You know, Hitler, Stalin, Mao, they could kill your body, but they couldn't destroy your soul. And these evil religious men can actually destroy much good in people's souls for people's souls. So we got guys like C.T. Russell, who founded the Jehovah's Witnesses. Back then they were called the Bible Students. Joseph Smith, creating Mormonism, giving people a false gospel and leading them away from the truth. We have our own guys like Benny Hinn, Kenneth Copeland, Brian McLaren, Rob Bell, Oprah, because you can have evil women too, not just evil men. And, you know, she's probably, well, some people call her America's pastor, you know. So think about how many people she might be leading astray. She must be leading astray because of her New Age spirituality and her denial of the gospel of Jesus. She says she's a Christian, and that, you know, we'll see that. Anybody can. So Oprah, Bart Ehrman. Yeah. Charles Darwin destroyed millions upon millions of people's lives through that theory. I was saying Bart Ehrman, who attacks the Bible. He's a scholar, attacks the Bible. William P. Young, author of The Shack, and also his newer book where he reveals his actual that he actually is a false teacher, a false prophet. Dan Brown, secular writer, but writes on religious themes. And, you know, he did the Da Vinci Code. He did another one. Now he has one out. I read about it, and I can't think of the topic that it was going to be about. But it's another attack upon Christianity and Christian history. Probably be made into a movie. So many evil religious men shut up the doors of heaven against men. This was the case in Jesus' day. Matthew 23:13, the first of the woes upon the scribes and the Pharisees. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. The truth of the gospel is extremely important. It's vital. People cannot be saved without it, apart from it. 2 Peter chapter 2, he talks about some of these men, and it's this passage is real similar to Jude chapter 1. And in verse 2 Peter 2 and verse 17, he says, these, speaking of false teachers, are wells without water, clouds carried by a tempest, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. For when they speak great swelling words of emptiness, they speak a lot, But they're great swelling words of emptiness. They don't have any meaning or value. When they speak these great swelling words of emptiness, they allure through the lust of the flesh, through lewdness, and the ones who have they lure the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error. Then he says of these people, while they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. So, yeah, come and be free, while they themselves are enslaved. For by whom a person is overcome, by him also he is brought into bondage. For if, after they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them and overcome, the latter end is worse for them than the beginning. For it would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness, than having known it to turn from the holy commandment delivered to them. But it has happened to them according to the true proverb, a dog returns to his own vomit, and a sow having washed to her wallowing in the mire. This is the evil of evil religious men, denying the Lord that bought them, he says in another place. And then 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 13, Paul writes to Timothy and says, evil men and imposters will grow worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. That was happening in Paul's day, and it's happening in our day. Imposters and evil men have a lot further reach now than they had then for men because of our media and all. So good righteous men tend to have a greater reach too if they use those means correctly. Certainly evil men can have a worldwide reach, deceiving and being deceived, whether they're secular or whether they're religious. So chapter 10. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he is a fool. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment. I kind of thought of shea butter there. And I didn't know if maybe there were some dead flies that got in that. Those shipments of shea butter that were coming out. But apparently they didn't smell very good. I thought it was shea butter. It says, so does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. And that made me think of Noah after the flood. You know, because he grew some grapes, got a little intoxicated, and you know, he covered himself in his tent. So a little folly lost some of his reputation there. MacDonald says, a man may build up a reputation for wisdom and honor, yet he can ruin it all by a single misstep. People will remember one little indiscretion and forget years of worthy achievements. Any person can ruin his reputation by speaking just three words of the wrong kind in public. I don't know which three words he had in mind or why he said three words. You know, you can do it with one. You can do it with more than three. Just yesterday or today, I saw the president of a big Baptist institution or director of some kind has stepped down for, you know, he's confessed an inappropriate relationship. And so all that reputation he had, you know, as being a Christian leader and all this background that he has and all, it's gone. I mean, Bob Coy, Calvary Chapel pastor, you know, horrible, horrible things that he was carrying on. And, you know, there were 20,000 people coming through those doors every week. It's seeking the Lord and he was ministering to him. Haven't heard anything of him since. You know, he's destroyed his life and his ministry. It was immoral situations, just like that's what heard what Chuck Smith say to beware of. Keep your hands off the money, off the women, and something. I think there was another one. Money and the women are always big, you know, those are, yeah, so either one of those can destroy a reputation, destroy ministry, and get you killed or something. But, I'll let you know if that third one comes back around sometime. Maybe I'm remembering it incorrectly, I don't know, but I do remember he warned the man that he was raising up, you know, against those things. Oh, well, he warned against, you know, being proud and letting people put you on a pedestal, you know, like you're somebody or something. The only one that needs to be on a pedestal is Jesus. He's the one we worship, nobody else. Commentator Dean again says, this is a metaphorical confirmation of the truth enunciated at the end of the last chapter. One sinner destroyeth much good. So a little folly does great harm to one respected for wisdom and honor, or it's just like a dead fly putrefying the perfumer's ointment. It gives off a foul odor. And Kidner says, there are endless instances of prizes forfeited and good beginning marred in a single reckless moment, not only by the irresponsible, such as Esau, but by the sorely tried, such as Moses and Aaron. So all those same people had issues, you know, just from single incidents. You know, Esau despising his birthright. He's hungry, so he sells it to Jacob for a pot of stew. And then he couldn't get it back. You know, that was an irreversible transaction. He didn't have the receipt. He couldn't bring it back. It already consumed it anyway. And Moses, you recall, getting angry with the people when God was not angry. It's usually the other way around. Usually God was angry with the people, and Moses was like, no, don't wipe them out, you know. But in this case, Moses was the one who misrepresented God before the people because of that anger. And Aaron, of course, tossing all the gold into the melting pot, and out came this calf, he said. Yeah. And then David Guzik finally says, the preacher is beginning to direct his arguments in the intended direction. Most people see a turning point in Ecclesiastes here, chapters 9 and going forward, where Solomon seems to be turning back to seeing things as he should see them. To use the metaphor of a ship, he has sailed in many different directions to show us the meaninglessness of life. Now, still out of sight of land, he begins to tack his direction towards meaning and truth. Ecclesiastes 10:1 reminds us that even small things have consequences. In verse 2, he says, a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. This is not a political statement, as much as conservatives would like for it to be. It's speaking, of course, of the right hand was the hand of power and strength, and the left. Not. Again, Guzik says, since the right hand was regarded as the side of strength, skill, and favor, the wise man's heart is known and is strength to him. This is not true of the fool whose heart is at his left. And right says, right and left are natural symbols for the strong and good, the one on the one hand, and for the weak and bad on the other hand. He points out that the Latin word sinister means left. That's the meaning of the Latin word, sinister. So that was generally thought of. And I think for a period of time, there was discrimination of against people who were left-handed because that was thought to just be an evil thing.
They're among you.
You all going to start a march or something?
Well,
I was supposed to be, but they made me switch in school. My sisters left me. Yeah, they make you switch. Well, in my era, they made you switch if you started using your left hand. Now I can't do anything with this hand. This was where my skill was going to be. You know, I was gypped. And Eden says, to have one's heart at his left side is to have the springs of life located in the realm of practical and spiritual incompetence. Practical and spiritual incompetence. Proverbs 4:23 says, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. So if your heart's on the left, which was the bad side, then that was a bad place to have your springs of life, because you weren't guarding them properly. So wise man's heart's at his right hand. A fool's heart is at his left. It is true that leftism is bad now. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he is a fool. I mean, what is the walk of a fool? Anybody seen a fool walking lately? Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom. He's probably wandering all over the place, not trying to figure out where he is, where he's going. He reveals he's a fool in his walk, and of course, walk, many times a walk is symbolic for your life, the way you live your life, and so forth. Conversation in the King James Version means the way you live. So it's similar, you know, when you walk. And he who believes in Jesus should walk even as he walked. So we're to live the way he lived. And if the spirit of a ruler rises against you, don't leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. So even if the king's mad at you, you don't want to acerbate the situation by also leaving your post and not carrying out your duties. This is similar to what we read back in Ecclesiastes 8, verses 2 and 3, where he says, I say, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. So you want to keep the king's commandment, and even if he gets angry with you, you don't want to make it worse. Stay in the cabinet office until he tells you you're fired and dismissed.
There's a proverb. I might be getting worse than that, but I've always thought that keep playing by the rules, even when everything's gone wrong. You know, I think that could almost fit anything, because I've seen this. So when everything's going wrong, it's easy just to want to throw the rule book out. And just, you know, this is what, you know, I'll give them what they've done to me. Or what does it matter what the rules are anymore? We're losing money, you know? And that's, I think that's kind of part of the whole thing. No, when everything's going wrong, you should just stick to the rules. No matter what.
Absolutely. Can't break the We're talking about the moral rules, right and wrong. You can't break those just because of a circumstance or something. You just stick with it. So, a little bit further. Verse 5, there is an evil I have seen under the sun, an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity while the rich sit in a lowly place. I've seen servants on horses while princes walk on the ground like servants. So this evil under the sun, error is proceeding from the ruler, that he set someone who's a fool, folly, set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a low place. Now, I don't know why he's equating rich with wisdom. He's already told us that, you know, the race is not to the swift, nor anything to the wise, etc. So. But certainly folly can be set in great dignity, and wisdom can be set in a lowly place. But for Solomon, under the sun, riches probably were very closely correlated with wisdom or intelligence. So he's saying there's partiality being shown. Servants are sitting on horses, princes walk on the ground like servants. for Solomon, this partiality was shown by being, this partiality would be bad to the fool and good to the rich, but there's no correlation between riches and wisdom or foolishness and poverty necessarily. God shows no partiality, and he desires that we not do so. In a number of scriptures, Exodus 23:3, he says, "You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute." And a lot of times it's thought that it's okay to show partiality to the poor man, but not to the rich man. But God doesn't want partiality shown in either situation. He wants justice to be done. So don't show partiality to the poor man, and he says the other thing as well. Deuteronomy 1:17, he says, "You shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small as well as the great. You shall not be afraid in any man's presence, for the judgment is God's. The taste that is too hard for you, bring to me and I will hear it." That was Moses when he had the 70 counselors that he had hear the easier cases. And he tells them, don't show any partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small as well as the great. And when there's corruption in government, there's partiality shown. That's a big part of the problem and part of the issue.
That's partiality in government.
And many times it's partiality to the great, to the wealthy, or to a person in a certain position or something along those lines. Deuteronomy 10:17, "For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality nor takes a bribe." So don't take any bribe yourself. He's God of God, Lord of Lords. Don't take breath. Deuteronomy 16:19, "You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality nor take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous." So he's against bribery. Acts 10:34-35, Peter called by God to go to Cornelius' house, and while he's there sharing the gospel with him, the Holy Spirit falls upon the company. Verse 34, he says, "Peter opened his mouth and said, 'In truth, I perceive that God shows no partiality. But in every nation, whoever fears him and works righteousness is accepted by him.'" These were Gentiles. We weren't supposed to go to a Gentile's house, eat with a Gentile. God had to give Peter this vision 3 times to get him over there. But the sheep led down from heaven, and then had to tell him, "The guys are at the door, they're here for you," so that he would go. And then when he got there, he took a bunch of guys with him. He took a bunch of brothers with him because he knew he was going to have to explain this later on. And he did. And the other guys were there to say, "Yeah, that's the way it was," Because he could have been excommunicated, and that would have been embarrassing for the first pope. Ephesians 6:9, he says, Paul writing, he says, "You masters, do the same things to them," that is servants, "giving up threatening, knowing that your own master also is in heaven and there is no partiality with him." So masters and servants, you get to heaven, God's not going to show partiality to the master or to the servant. There's going to be no partiality. James is big on this. James chapter 2, he spends quite a bit of time on it. The first 4 verses, he says, "My brethren, do not hold the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with partiality. For if there should come into your assembly a man with gold rings and fine apparel, and there should also come in a poor man in filthy clothes, and you pay attention to the one wearing the fine clothes and say to him, 'You sit here in a good place,' and say to the poor man, 'You stand there,' or 'Sit here at my footstool,' have you not shown partiality among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?" So, he's saying if you treat the rich man real nice, because he's a rich man, and you treat the poor man badly, then you're showing partiality and you become a judge with evil thoughts, he said.
And he, on Facebook, he's talking about this church is way down being pastors. And this poor man came in the door, he shuffled everything, came to the front of the church to sit
sit there. They ask him to go to the back of the church. They did not treat him at all. Then they ask the new pastor to come forward. You know? And the sheriff man walked up to the front. He was the new pastor.
Get to see how they were, yeah.
And he called me down.
That's a state of many things, and you know, James points out that the rich were the ones who were oppressing them, and so you know, but you shouldn't show partiality in either way. This lack of partiality shows, among other things, that God is not a Calvinist. He doesn't choose one and reject another without any reason. There is no heavenly lottery. He's not pulling balls out of the big cage and, you know, reading off the numbers. Oh, look who's coming. We wasn't expecting that. So, you know, he gives men choices, and men are responsible to choose, and then they're responsible for the choices they make. So, now, this idea of folly being set in great dignity, there was a management book years ago that was written. It was about the time I was getting into business classes and things like that. And it was called the Peter Principle. I don't think it had anything to do with Peter, you know, in the New Testament. But the idea of the book was that in any organization like a big corporation or a business or something where, you know, things are rather impersonal, I guess, you know, the corporation is really the boss. So it's not anybody typically running it. He said, everyone tends to rise to the level of their incompetence because they get promoted because they're doing well, and then they get promoted to a position beyond which they don't get promoted. So they've risen to the level of their incompetence. They can't go any further than that. You know? That's kind of like the folly said in great dignity. And finally, Jay Vernon says, this is one of the things that has happened in our day and age, that is this folly. A dignity has been given to sin. And this was a while back. There was a time when sin was down on the side street. It was considered dirty and filthy, and it savored of that which was low and foul. But today, sin has moved up on the boulevard. Sin is committed with great dignity, and it has been given a prominent place. It is given a prominent place on TV shows and in movies. It's true. I mean, there was plenty of sin when I was a child. It's a rather conservative society, but it was kept in the dark, you know, and under the covers and so forth. And wasn't accepted in public or polite society, at least much of it. Now, you know, it's pride, yeah. We're proud of our sin and our rebellion against God and what He said. Used to have shame. There was a guy who wrote a column this week that said, he was saying we've forgotten how to blush. You know, it's impossible for Americans to blush anymore because of all the things that are promoted and flaunted even in people's faces. So we will stop at that point.